Welcome to On the Brink Radio with Jeff Phillips Wefferson here coming at you from Aotea, a remote island on the North Island of New Zealand, Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud. We've got a very special guest with us today, Peter Kirby from San Rafael, California, who is an independent investigative researcher who's been delving into what's happening with the whole world of geoengineering and geophysical warfare, and he has a brilliant new book he's come out with, and we're both working together to try to map the uncharted territory of understanding what the military-industrial complex is up to behind their closed doors. But Peter, I'd really like to welcome you to the show and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff. That's a great intro. Yeah, you know, I'm really just a guy who loves truth and loves finding things out. And you know, I was inspired at one point when I realized that 9/11 was an inside job. And then I turned to the new media and saw all these just amazing stories. And over time, it's dawned on me, you know, just the depths of the conspiracies and the depths of the lies that we're all being subjected to on a daily basis. And, you know, so I started writing about things, but most notably I started writing about chemtrails. I've dabbled in other things, but chemtrails and geoengineering is really where I've been digging in. And at one point, the publisher of ActivistPost.com noticed my work and started publishing me. And I've been made a staff writer on Activist Post some years ago, and the editor there, Michael Edwards, he continues to show great support for my work, and he really makes me a better writer. And as of 2016, I released the paperback edition of my book, Chemtrails Exposed, A New Manhattan Project. Up until 2016, it was just an ebook that I was continually updating with every new paper that I would write. But as of 2016, it reached a point where it was comprehensive, and I was able to come forward with a real framework of a real breakdown of this whole thing. And so here we are today. And since the publication of the book, I've gone on to fill in other parts of the book that were kind of left out because I didn't have the time to get to them. This thing is so huge that it really requires just an amazing amount of research. I'm overwhelmed with the amount of information that I have to go through. But I continue to go through it because what's going on in the skies above us is just so absolutely unacceptable that I will never stop exposing it.
Well, that is so cool, man. I'd really like to give you a big old hug and a big pat on the back for that, because you're a very intrepid spirit that's on the what I consider to be the vanguard. You know, the work that you're doing, you know, your background, you may not be a professional scientist or a medical practitioner like, for example, Dr. Nick Begich, who is also almost single-handedly responsible for the fact that we knew about HAARP even before it was built because of his inside connections up there in Alaska. But, you know, let me just give a little note here. What originally brought me onto you was about a year or so ago, I was really observing how the whole, I put the words climate change, I put that in quotation marks, because climate change, you know, it's, to me, I was just thinking about how it's so ridiculous, and the amount of bullshit that's been associated with that whole thing, and how it's been foisted, the degree to which it's been foisted on the public mind. What came to me was that it reminded me as if there was a Manhattan Project of public relations, you know, of sort of a Manhattan Project of the psychological dimension that was foisting the whole climate change thing. And that's what originally brought me in touch with your work. And so it's kind of like equal parts psychological warfare and geophysical warfare. And so, you know, tell us about exactly, you want to tell us about the history of the man-made theory of global warming, and what is that, and why is that important?
Well, yeah, it's really a great confluence of things. The reasons why this false theory has been promulgated so much in the media. I mean, you know, you read articles about that have nothing to do with climate change or whatnot, and then at the end they're just like, oh yeah, and it helps save the world from global warming too. And it's like, what the hell is that? They're just constantly inserting this theory into places where it doesn't belong. And you know, it's one of its main purposes is to divert people who have legitimate concerns about the environment into something that doesn't matter. It diverts people right into the hands of the globalists. And so it's designed to have people like you and me, you know, who are actually concerned and real environmentalists. It's designed to have us wasting our time chasing windmills.
Precisely, I agree. And how many people do you know that have bought into the whole mainstream climate change scenario so deeply? And I think this was totally premeditated on the part of the psychological warfare experts. These people are so deeply gripped by this, and it's intertwined with their genuine love of nature and the environment, but they've been convinced to believe that climate change is our worst enemy. And so it's almost like a religious cult. I mean, I've lost friends and had people get seriously pissed off at me for pointing out the amount of holes in climate change dogma that a Swiss cheese would be jealous of.
Right. They get pissed off because subconsciously they know that they're wrong, but they're too insecure to admit it. That they're too insecure to admit that they've been duped.
Well,
it's, you know, personally speaking from my experience, maybe you saw it was phony straight off, but from my experience, you know, there were some years where I thought, yeah, sure, that makes sense. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of carbon being emitted, you know, all these internal combustion engines, and it's got to have some effect on the planet. So I basically was buying into it for a long time. But, you know, I think it's the responsible thing to do to admit when you've been fooled. And you know, my dedication to the truth is much greater than my ego.
Absolutely.
So,
and you kind of took the...
more people were like you and I.
You took the red pill, as they say, from the Matrix. But I think another factor that prohibits people from sort of admitting to what's closer to the truth is that when you start telling them about geophysical warfare and the fact that HAARP is not just some conspiracy theory, but even that's old school. The whole idea of geophysical warfare and the level that the military has gone to in terms of a whole new paradigm, you know, they don't want to accept that. They want to think that still could only exist in science fiction movies. But I always say, like, look, they developed the atomic bomb in 3 years, 73 years ago. So do you think these people have been sitting on their hands the whole time? No, they've been going to the next level many times over with more money than we even could imagine, and brain power and everything to come up. And we're only able to talk about the stuff that we know about.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's get started on the whole story here.
Yes.
And it does evolve into the whole military-industrial complex thing. I think we should start off by going over the reasons how the theory of man-made global warming is false.
Yes.
And I think right off the top, it needs to be said that this is something that came from the establishment. This is something that came from the top down, not the bottom up. If people recall, that this was not something that started with, you know, grassroots organizations holding small meetings out of their own pocket, you know, building towards the county and then the state level and then the federal level and all that and then the global level and all this type of stuff. It came straight from the establishment down.
Yes.
This is where the tyranny always comes from. The tyranny always comes from the top. It's a well-funded establishment effort.
Well,
I think that needs to be spoken about right off the top. There are other scientific reasons why it's false.
Yes.
Carbon dioxide comprises only 0.038% of the Earth's atmosphere. This is not debated among scientists, even the climate gurus and whatnot. 0.038% of Earth's atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Of that 0.038%, only 3% is man-made. So 97% of the atmosphere's carbon dioxide comes from dead and dying vegetation and other sources.
Volcanic eruptions.
You know, volcanoes and things
spilling
crap into the atmosphere. But, I mean, we're talking about infinitesimal amounts of gas. 3% is the definition of statistically insignificant.
Yes.
So the atmospheric carbon dioxide is insignificant in the atmosphere. I know they say, oh, it's only a little bit, but it's really powerful. No, it's not. The most powerful greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is water.
Absolutely.
You know how when there's clouds overhead?
Absolutely.
And it's a muggy day? That's because the water in the atmosphere and the clouds is holding in the heat. That is the most potent greenhouse gas.
Absolutely.
Water, the most prevalent, the most powerful is the water.
By orders of magnitude.
Not the carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide is in parts per million. It's important for the plant kingdom, but I think I'm anticipating one of your next statements is that also there's nothing about carbon or carbon dioxide that's toxic or poisonous. The only way carbon dioxide can hurt you is if you get asphyxiated, there's a bunch of carbon dioxide but no oxygen. But in itself, it's not even minimally toxic or poisonous, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, what's most poisonous is carbon monoxide.
Absolutely.
That's how people get killed. I mean,
carbon
dioxide is good. It's good for plants. When there's more carbon dioxide, stuff grows better. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I've attempted growing marijuana plenty of times, and I learned that, you know, you put carbon dioxide into the garden to make the plants grow better.
Yes.
You know, the plants like it. They turn it into oxygen. This is a virtuous cycle.
Yes. Did you know that in the days of Thomas Jefferson, if you owned land, you were required by law to grow hemp on a certain percentage of your land?
Okay. Sure, why not? But, okay, I have more evidence here. Okay, and also, okay, carbon dioxide is good, and it's not carbon dioxide that drives climate. I mean, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous to say that this is driving the climate, that this is changing the Earth's climate. What drives climate is the sun. Okay, the sun, you know, that great big ball of fire in the sky.
Our closest star.
Climate.
Yes.
You can look back and you know, times when the sun has been more active, such as it has been in, you know, maybe some decades past, as Earth was warming some in the decades past, that's because you had more sun activity. Well, now we're entering into a period where the sun has gone dormant, and we have a lack of sunspots. So, the Earth's temperature has actually been going down a little bit in recent years, like over about the past decade. So, I mean, what's really more probable than the Earth warming is the Earth cooling. But, of course, now it's changed into, you know, climate change. First of all, you know, you go back to the 70s and they were talking about the Earth cooling and how that's a problem. And, it's caused by man and it's a problem. And then, you know, the latest thing was, the warming is caused by man. And now it's just climate change. I mean, just like any type of weather is caused by man.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, and see, but they're also throwing little bits of truth at you because we have this giant global weather modification program in place.
Yes.
So actually, yeah, man is changing the weather.
Yes.
He's changing the weather and the climate. So, you know, all these things get so convoluted and so confused that people really don't even know what they're talking about anymore.
Exactly.
You know, are we talking about global warming? Are we talking about climate change? I mean, apparently they've gotten their marching orders from the CIA now, and everybody just says climate change. They don't even say global warming anymore because
yes.
They know the Earth is cooling. I mean,
well, look,
it's just crazy.
You've touched on two very significant dimensions of the whole psychological warfare paradigm. One is, I started to bring it up a while ago, Hitler first talked about a technique called the big lie, where he figured out that if you told a lie that was just so huge and preposterous, that people would actually believe it. And the whole climate change seemed like a perfect example of that. And then also, another technique that the propagandists use is, there was a book, an Army psychological warfare book called Truth is Our Weapon. So they actually, that in itself can be read at many levels, but, you know, to use, it's like the bait on a fish hook. You know, you put in a little bit of the truth, and then you tag on the bullshit that you want people to swallow. You know, like you were mentioning earlier about the climate change gets tagged on as the reason for all these different things.
The tyrants of this world know very well how to manipulate the human mind.
Absolutely.
Stalin said the same thing about, you know, make the lie simple, just repeat it enough times and it becomes the truth. And this is what they've been doing with this global warming nonsense. And then here's some more propaganda they've been throwing at us. They say 95% of scientists support it, which is total bull, okay? And there's plenty of scientists who don't support it. There was something called the Heidelberg Appeal of 1992, where 4,000 scientists and 72 Nobel Prize winners were questioning the theory. And then there's also something called the Global Warming Petition Project, which has garnered the signature of 31,487 scientists, and 9,029 of those have PhDs, have signed a statement saying that the theory of man-made global warming is inconsistent with the evidence. But they're never going to tell you that in the mainstream media.
No.
They're going to say it's 95% of science, 95% of science. They aren't weighing both sides. These are not journalists.
No.
These are propagandists.
Did you hear that several thousand NASA scientists all drafted a letter demanding that James Hansen resign because of his global warming bullshit? And this also reminds me of another propaganda technique created by the Mac Daddy of PR, Edward Bernays. You might have heard of him back in the early 1900s. He was kind of like the Einstein of propaganda. But he first created the panel of experts to first for the tobacco industry and then for things like fluoride and toothpaste. And he'd get like Joe Blow off the street and say, like, okay, you're going to be Dr. Smith, you're Dr. Johnson. And then he comes up with the, yes, 9 out of 10 dentists recommend that you use Crest toothpaste because of its fluoride. You know, so it's the exact same thing, just on a bigger scale.
Yeah, that's just like how, you know, you can get any response you want out of people depending on how you word questions for a poll. You know, if you want to show that, people like green cars rather than black cars, you can word a question as you take the poll to produce, you know, whether if you're producing black cars and you want people to say that they like black cars better, well, then you can just word the question and have people answer it and make your point for you in any way you want. I mean, regardless of whether or not people support Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, the polls going into the election said that Clinton was going to win by 15 points. You know, it was like, what? And then Donald Trump won. They're messing around with these polls up one side and down the other.
Yes. Well, it's in the same way I've in learning about studying, for example, Antarctic ice cores and all the record of ancient temperatures and stuff like that, that depending on how you can take the exact same set of data, and depending on how you look at it and how you choose to analyze it, you can show simultaneously with the same facts and figures that the Earth might be warming or it might be cooling in exactly the same place and time, depending on your method of statistical analysis.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have a hard time predicting the weather 4 days in advance. But we're supposed to, you know everything about where the climate is going with 100% certainty, and we're supposed to, you know, rework our government and our society because of what you know, these so-called scientists who are very well paid, are coming up with. There's been a whole lot of money behind this, promoting all this. Okay, so we know that it's a lie. An objective mind looking at the evidence knows that it's a lie. So why would this lie be put forward, and why would it be so pervasive in our society? And right there is the point I just made. There's so much money and power behind it, just like the former head of the meteorology department at MIT, Richard Lindzen, said the global warming is not about science. It's about money and power.
Yes. Well, have you heard of the Club of Rome?
What's that?
Have you heard of the Club of Rome?
Yeah. I haven't looked into their role in all this.
Well, but it's huge.
That, I think Al Gore is a member of that.
Yes. Well, listen to this. In 1990, I've seen this book in hard copy. It came out in 1990, published by the Club of Rome, and it's called The First Global Revolution. And on a certain page in there, it actually says that our goal is to, in order to manipulate humanity into accepting our goal of a one-world government based on a socialistic model, we're going to foist fake environmental and sociological crises on humanity, including that of global warming. They actually say that in 1990.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right. But I got, okay, so let's break down some the most commonly recognized motives that people know of. People who are of an open mind and people who are of an objective mind and not an emotional mind. The most commonly recognized motives for this lie, the most commonly recognized one is just that: collectivism, communism, socialism, globalism. All these things are different names for centralized power. That's what it's all about. Communism, collectivism, socialism, globalism, all centralized power. This is where the tiny, you know, 0.00000001%, maybe probably some more zeros in there, of the society is able to have total power over the rest of everybody. That's what the real elites of this world want. I'm not talking about the 1%. I'm not talking about the guy down the street who makes $1 million a year. He's not the 1%. He's not the real elites of this world. The real elites of this world want to control everything from the top down, and they are a very, very tiny minority of our society.
Yes.
So, but that's been pretty well established, and many books that have been written about that. And, you know, of course, there are other socioeconomic agendas that play into that, most notably the cap and trade scenario where, you know, you're not supposed to emit emit a certain amount of carbon. And then you trade the carbon credits on exchanges. Of course, Al Gore is heavily invested in that. That's pretty well known. I mean, that's, you know, the number one these are number one reasons why, you know, how people recognize the reason behind this lie of the theory of man-made global warming. The second one, which is the second most commonly recognized one, I think, is that it's been used as a reason to promote nuclear power over carbon-based fuels.
Well, yes, and what people don't understand about, I mean, I've been onto the nuclear thing for a really long time, and just as a footnote, there's a nuclear plant in North Carolina that's actually in danger of having a meltdown scenario right now because of floodwaters. But nuclear power is using and creating the most deadly substances we know of in the universe outside of a supernova, over close to 2,000 synthetic radionuclides, in order to boil water to make steam to turn a turbine to generate electricity.
Yeah,
it was stupid.
We're supposed to be all concerned with the carbon that comes from internal combustion engines. Meanwhile, we're supposed to be not concerned at all about nuclear waste.
Exactly. They've almost successfully eradicated...
Crazy.
They've eradicated the whole nuclear thing from the public mind because I think the whole purpose of it from day one wasn't about blowing stuff up with missiles and bombs. It's about using it as a biological weapon for depopulation.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's a whole nother topic there. You
yes.
Said the word depopulation, and that's we're going to go off on some rabbit trails there. But okay, what we really want to talk about tonight is the least recognized motivation for the theory of man-made global warming, which is geoengineering and geophysical warfare.
Yes. Well,
so,
would you say that this was designed to be a smokescreen? Because the geophysical warfare technology is very adept at heating. That's what microwaves do, and at creating extreme weather, but in very localized areas, certainly not global or hemispherical.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's all levels of these things. You know, the day-to-day, there's day-to-day manipulation of the weather, where they're sort of relatively benignly manipulating financial markets and all these other things that they do. And then, you know, of course, there's also the extreme weather stuff. But, you know, you can't have extreme weather stuff going on all the time.
No.
You know, maybe people would get a little suspicious.
Absolutely.
But the theory of man-made global warming has been a cover story for the biggest scientific effort in history, which is my area of expertise, the New Manhattan Project.
That's a brilliant name for it. That's a perfect name.
Yeah. And you know, the scientists who were responsible for the original Manhattan Project, they all, or most of them, or a lot of them, let me just say a lot of them so I can be safe, got into the atmospheric sciences and weather modification shortly after they made the first atomic bomb. So that's why I call it that. And so, but you know, even beyond the, you know, so as far as our topic tonight is concerned, you know, the theory of man-made global warming being a cover story for the new Manhattan Project, in other words, chemtrails, in other words, geoengineering. If you just go back and you just look at the roots of the modern theory of man-made global warming, that's all you find. The origins of the theory of man-made global warming, let me say the modern theory of man-made global warming, is all rooted in SRM geoengineering,
solar radiation management,
and the CIA.
Yes.
This is where you find the earliest examples of the theory of man-made global warming. Okay, but first of all, we have to go back to Savant Arrhenius, who was a German scientist who first hypothesized about the theory of man-made global warming. This is what I call the old theory of man-made global warming.
Yes.
He was talking about man's carbon emissions raising the Earth's average temperature back, I believe, before the internal combustion engine, or right around the time that started coming out. There were factories and things going on, so this is why he was hypothesizing about it.
His work
was relegated to scientific journals,
yes,
and obscure books, and most of this stuff was in German.
Yes.
So nobody knew about the work of Savant Arrhenius at the time when he was doing it.
Did he come up with the greenhouse theory? Did he call it that? Is he who first came up with the greenhouse theory idea?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Savant Arrhenius. I should have put his dates of birth and death here in my notes. I don't have it.
Okay.
But it was, I believe, in the late 1800s that he first started hypothesizing about this. But like I said, it was not in the popular culture. It was not something that people knew about. Now we see today something that is firmly embedded in the popular culture. So we need to ask ourselves, well, how did it get there, right? So the first mentions of the theory of man-made global warming that started putting it in the popular culture, the very first one that I have found was an article by the Manhattan Project scientist John von Neumann. In 1955, he wrote an article. I'm hearing some feedback. Are you hearing that noise?
I'm not hearing it.
Okay, I hope it doesn't show up on the recording.
No, it's not.
He, in 1955, in Fortune magazine, John von Neumann wrote an article called "Can We Survive Technology?" And this began the modern theory of man-made global warming. And what differentiates the modern theory of man-made global warming from the old theory of man-made global warming is that the theory of man-made global warming was connected to the SRM geoengineering thesis, and it was presented in a popular venue, Fortune magazine. This is very important because not only was it brought into a larger realm of consciousness among the general public, it was also connected. John von Neumann in the article also mentioned the SRM geoengineering thesis, which allowed the military-industrial complex to weaponize the theory of man-made global warming.
Yes.
It allowed them to say, oh, look, here's a problem. The eminent scientist John von Neumann says so, and he even offers us something to do about it.
Yes.
So that's what we do.
Yes.
We're gonna do something. We can build the military-industrial industrial complex could then build around the theory of man-made global warming and build this new Manhattan Project and build all these geoengineering projects and all this stuff. It started the whole gravy train process that we've been seeing going on in the military-industrial complex for so long now concerning global warming.
Yes, and what year was von Neumann's paper again? In the 1940s?
1955.
55, okay, the dawn of the space age.
Okay, yeah, 57 was Sputnik.
Okay. So you, I really want to congratulate you on your in-depth research that's telling all this, because von Neumann was a very central, he was like a lot of his work had to do with the foundations of what made computers possible.
Oh yeah, he was a pioneer of supercomputers.
Yes.
He was a pioneer of supercomputers and writing programs for the supercomputers that could predict the weather.
Yes.
He was a pioneer of computerized weather prediction.
Yes. Well, this is another dimension that could possibly even be another whole show we could do. But talking about the centrality of computers and the strategic computing initiative back in the days of Reagan and how all that's led up to making all this possible.
Yes, and I also say that the modern theory of man-made global warming has its roots in the CIA as well as in SRM geoengineering and weather modification, because John von Neumann, 3 years prior to the release of his article in Fortune magazine, he became an advisor to the CIA.
Okay, now look, you've in the past little bit, you've used two different trinary acronyms, SRM and CIA, and can you explain what both of those are as you see
it? I think everybody knows what the CIA is. That's a Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, but what are they?
Yeah,
what are they?
Yeah, no, we should speciate these out. I'm not sure speciate is a word, but I use it anyway.
Well, that's okay.
SRM geoengineering is solar radiation management geoengineering. This is the most popular and most popularized branch of geoengineering. That this is where the geoengineers talk about, well, you know, global warming might get so bad that we might actually have to put planes in the sky, like spraying stuff to reflect sunlight back into space. You know, they never admit that it's actually going on right now. They just say, oh, it might be a good idea.
Yes, and this is to fix the global warming.
Yeah, this is the fix for global warming.
And the CIA, of course, is the Central Intelligence Agency, but what do they actually do, for real?
The geoengineers?
No, it's the CIA.
Oh, well, you know, the evidence suggests that the Central Intelligence Agency is the day-to-day manager, the overall hands-on manager of the entire project.
Yes, but do they, are they sort of like a black budget secret army that does all the covert or manages all the they're like the contractor for all the covert sort of projects and stuff?
I think that they are probably the most important group in the whole thing. It looks to me like they're probably the liaison in between. I think they probably report directly to the people who have brought this project along the whole way, which is something that I suggest as being you can call it by different names. The author, John Coleman, he says that it's called the Committee of 300, and this is a group of some of the most powerful people in the world who get together and you know, come up with stuff just like this. There's also been a mathematical study that determined something called the network of global corporate control.
Yes.
I think that's who the CIA works for.
And can you spell the name that John Coleman, can you spell that?
C-O-L-E-M-A-N,
okay.
Coleman.
Now what about this?
He also wrote a book about the Rothschilds, which I'm going to read.
Okay. Now tell us about this thing called the Jason Group.
The Jason Group is another one of these scientific groups that has probably been involved in the production of the New Manhattan Project, but that's kind of I'm going to Gordon J. F. McDonald was part of that, so
yes.
I'm going to get into him a little later. We
okay.
can talk about the Jason Group a little more
okay.
as we go on here. But yeah, I think it's important to start at the beginning here with John von Neumann's article, Can We Survive Technology? And I think we've gone over that pretty well. And then the other earliest mentions were all in the context of weather modification. okay? We've seen John von Neumann's participation in weather modification. He was a pioneer of computerized weather forecasts. And then we had von Neumann in 55. We had Bernard Vonnegut.
Yes, Kurt's
Bernard
brother.
In early 1958, in the most cited weather modification report ever, he wrote an article called, he co-authored an article called The Future, which stated the theory of man-made global warming and the SRM geoengineering thesis once again. And Bernard Vonnegut, his work was in the area of manipulating dispersed particles with electromagnetic energy. So he definitely worked in the vein of the new Manhattan Project. His whole career was basically in weather modification.
Yes.
So we had one in 55, we had one in 58. Both of these guys are deeply involved in weather modification. And weather modification always involves the participation of the military-industrial complex. Even the stuff that they're doing today, you know, independent companies that spray silver iodide and whatnot, all of that was developed by the military. Bernard Vonnegut was key in the development of all early weather modification technologies, and then later in that same year, 1958, we had Howard T. Orville wrote an article appearing in Popular Science magazine, which was titled "Weather as a Weapon." Howard T. Orville was the science advisor to the president and an eminent weather modifier. And in this article, Weather as a Weapon, he asserted the theory of man-made global warming and the SRM geoengineering thesis again. So we're seeing a pattern develop here that the first three earliest mentions of the theory of man-made global warming and what to do about it have all been in the context of weather modification.
Yes, but would you say, is it accurate to say that from World War II or even earlier, all these, the secret enclaves of the scientists and the high-level military people, they always wanted to be able to try to control the weather, and so as they went along, they saw the whole thing of global warming, climate change as a way to, a problem to foist onto the public so that the solution to that would be their attempt to control the weather, you know, the problem reaction solution scenario.
It's an ancient desire. I'm finding examples of geoengineering that go back to ancient times. I've been reading world history lately, and you can see back in history multiple examples just in the books that I've been reading about what there was something back in Babylon times where in order to They were laying siege to Babylon back in ancient times, and one army caused the river near Babylon. They diverted the river to make it flow into the city so that it broke down the wall and they were able to invade. That's an early example of geoengineering.
Yes.
Apparently, Eric the Red, the Viking, caused a mountain to fall upon his enemies at one point. And then, you know, there's actually more. But the other things are kind of slipping my mind right now. You know, you can look back to shaman who would perform rain dances. You know, usually the most prevalent thing that people have wanted historically is rain.
Yes.
You know, generally, because, you know, you need rain for life.
They
so
want it for
if you
a positive.
Water, you know, you're going to try to do something to make it happen.
Yeah, for a positive purpose.
So we have. This history of the theory of man-made global warming associated with weather modification, and then the one last document, the fourth earliest document that I've been able to find stating the theory of man-made global warming and the SRM geoengineering thesis was in 1965. Lyndon Baines Johnson's White House published a paper called "Restoring the Quality of Our Environment," which you know. talk said, hey, man's carbon emissions is causing the earth to warm. It's a big problem. We got to do something about it. They say, you know, hey, maybe if we put particles in the atmosphere, reflect sunlight back into space, it'll save us all. And this is so significant because this was a government document.
Yes.
And it came from the highest office in the land. When the executive branch of the federal government issues a document, all of the federal offices below the executive branch, which is basically all of the government, has to be in general compliance with whatever it is that they put forth in paper. So that gave the green light to all government agencies to begin to tackle this problem officially in an official capacity using our tax dollars.
Yes, like a national security directive or something like that.
Yes, it was a matter of national security, absolutely.
As are all these things. Climate change. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, there's more where that came from.
Absolutely. Well,
let's get into the heart of what you want to talk about here. How this these early dabblings in weather modification turned into geophysical warfare and the military industrial complex.
Yes.
There was a vice admiral in the Navy who was who looks to be key to the development of this next generation of weather weapons. This is not, you know, early on they were talking more about the actual weather, the stuff that they called weather modification was basically about dumping stuff into clouds and making it rain.
Yes.
But this guy, William F. Radbourne, and we'll get into Gordon MacDonald in a second, but William Radbourne really started bringing forward something of a more comprehensive nature that could manipulate all aspects of our planet, not just the weather, like any type of geophysical condition.
Yes.
And he talked about how we're going to use electromagnetic energy to accomplish this. He wrote a paper in 1963 called New Horizons of Naval Research.
So he was a scientist himself?
What's that?
Was he a scientist himself?
No, he was an organizer, he was an administrator, he was, I guess you could basically say he was a bureaucrat.
Okay.
But he organized a lot of things. He's most noted for producing the Polaris submarine.
For
which
real?
Was the first submarine that was able to launch missiles while it was
submerged. Yes,
and
absolutely.
It was launching nuclear missiles.
Wow.
He came out with that in around 1960, I believe.
Very interesting.
So he got involved with the electromagnetic energy and how it can modify the weather, because to communicate with these submarines, you know, the nuclear-powered submarines, which could now dive very deeply, submarines that were not nuclear-powered, the predecessors of nuclear-powered submarines, could not dive very deeply. They were powered by oil and gas and stuff, and they had to stay near the surface because they constantly needed oxygen.
Yes.
Well, for nuclear reactions, you don't need oxygen. So you can have the nuclear-powered sub dive miles down deep and be very safe down there. But the problem was you couldn't communicate with the subs when they were down that far. So the solution to that problem was electromagnetic energy.
Yes.
And specifically ELF, electromagnetic energy, extremely low frequency waves of electromagnetic energy. And these were bounced off the ionosphere and sent down to the submarines as a one-way communication system. And so, you know, this is knocking on the door of today's ionospheric heaters, which use ELF and VLF signals, bouncing them off the ionosphere to modify the weather, among many other things.
Absolutely. Well, look, is this a good point? I don't want to divert your train of thought, but the work of Nikola Tesla has been central in all of this. And correct me if I'm wrong, but he actually wrote about exactly this kind of thing back in around the turn of the century, didn't he?
Well, you know, I've read quite a bit about Tesla, and I have found that he was writing about modifying the weather with electromagnetic energy, in other words, modifying the atmosphere, which would in turn modify the weather. But Beyond that, I haven't found much. I've seen another activist who was presenting a quote from Tesla about how the activist's name is Matt Landman. He was presenting a quote from Tesla in one of his presentations that said about how dispersed particles could be manipulated to modify the weather, but I have yet to find that quote.
Yes.
I asked Matt to give me the source for that, but I didn't hear back from him.
Yes.
But Tesla was interested in modifying the weather and modifying the atmosphere with electromagnetic energy, and the inventor of HARP, world's most powerful and most versatile ionospheric heater, this guy named Bernard Eastland was the inventor of it. He was named in a lot of the patents, and in those patents he says, yes, this is Tesla technology, I'm borrowing from Tesla.
Yes.
Inspired me.
Absolutely.
His work inspired me to come forward with HARP here.
Yes. Do you know who he was working for at the time?
Eastland?
Yes. It was called Atlantic Richfield. It was an oil company called ARCO.
APTI.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? They were looking for a way to use the trillions of cubic feet of natural gas on the slopes up there in Alaska, and he came up with a way that they could use that to generate the electricity to power HARP.
Yes, the north slope of Alaska, where ARCO was mining gas and oil, they were using the natural gas to power HARP, and to this day they use the natural gas from the north slope of Alaska to power HARP, as far as I know. The HARP project has gone black again.
Yes.
We were getting a lot of information about it some years ago, but now they're not talking about it at all, which speaks volumes.
But what I think has happened is that the technology has evolved so far and so fast that now it's all become a network, as it really always was, a global network of interconnected transmitters, many of which are small and very mobile.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's been miniaturized. All these technologies have been miniaturized, and they're probably all around us.
Yes.
And then just put up there under different names. You know, the Department of Homeland Security says put it up there or else, and so people dutifully put it up there. They don't know what the hell it is, but they connect it, and, you know, then off we go. But let's bring it back to HARP again.
Yes.
Here, and William Rabborn. The guy who wrote New Horizons of Naval Research, talking about a new type of comprehensive weather control in the context of military and warfare. He was on the board of directors of something called LTV Electrosystems. LTV Electrosystems became E-Systems. E-Systems built HARP.
They were bought by Raytheon.
William Rabborn, yeah, the first version of HARP. William Rabborn stayed on the board of directors throughout their transition from LTV Electrosystems to E-Systems.
Very interesting.
The connections between William Rabborn and this geophysical warfare and electromagnetic energy in HARP are well documented.
Now, didn't you also say that Rabborn was the head of the CIA for a year?
That's right. In 1965, he was the head of the CIA at the time that the aforementioned document restoring the quality of our environment came out. That was the last of the four documents that I mentioned.
Yes.
As you know, the first four mentioning both the theory of man-made global warming and what to do about it, the SRM geoengineering thesis.
So he,
Rabborn was the head of the CIA at the time that document came out. Now let's get into our friend Gordon J.F., How to Wreck the Environment, McDonald. His name is really Gordon J.F. McDonald. I call him Gordon J.F., How to Wreck the Environment, McDonald, because he's most famous for writing a paper called just that, How to Wreck the Environment. And in that paper, he writes about controlling people's minds from outer space using satellites.
Yes.
It's unbelievable stuff. But he was... He looks to be deeply involved in creating this comprehensive global weather modification project. He was a geophysicist. So what he started talking about was how you incorporate all aspects of the Earth and the atmosphere and the extended atmosphere, the magnetosphere, pretty much everything in between the sun and the earth, how all of these things come into play to produce the weather that we see here in the troposphere. And he wrote some books that I have not read yet, but he wrote some books about all this geophysical stuff. He was a chief scientist of the MITRE Corporation. Not only was he a chief scientist, he was on the board of directors. He also later became a trustee of the MITRE Corporation. Now, my research indicates, and I've written about it, how the MITRE Corporation looks to be the overall scientific manager of the New Manhattan Project. And so, you know, he is deeply ingrained in the MITRE Corporation. He worked on the CIA's satellite program called Medea. He was also a liaison for the CIA to the aforementioned Jason Group, which is, it's like a secret, the Jason Group is like a secretive group of scientists that work on a lot of black projects, a lot of classified things, really smart people working on really hard problems. And at one point, the Jason Group had their headquarters in a building owned by the MITRE Corporation. So I think we're beginning to see some connections here. Gordon J. F. McDonald was a strong proponent of the theory of man-made global warming. He also worked with Al Gore to advocate for a carbon tax.
That I didn't know.
He was also a co-author of the aforementioned document, Restoring the Quality of Our Environment.
I knew that.
So I think we see the ties between the theory of man-made global warming, SRM geoengineering, the CIA, and weather modification here.
Yes, and McDonald was also a mentor of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Obama's top national security advisor for all 8 years. He was a very big advocate of all the different uses of the geophysical warfare, not even just weather modification, but what he called tectonic warfare that would involve creating earthquakes and volcanoes, and what you mentioned before, the global mind control or cognitive debilitation scenario.
He was into all of it.
Yes.
He was into all of it, just like Bernard Vonnegut. Bernard Vonnegut, as I mentioned earlier, I mentioned him earlier, but Bernard Vonnegut was a Manhattan Project scientist. He was into the weather modification. He was into the atmospheric manipulation of particles. He was into the mind control.
Let's
Bernard Vonnegut. Bernard Vonnegut was into the mind control as well. He wrote a paper, I think it was 1961. It was called, he wrote about a sphere in a chamber surrounded by gas, and they would shoot electromagnetic energy at the sphere and then record the effects upon the sphere. And in the paper, they talk about the sphere being the head of a man.
Wow.
He was in all of it. There's been a very concerted effort to convince the public, as we were conversing before, there's been a very concerted effort to convince the public that the theory of man-made global warming is true. And the evidence indicates that the group behind this effort to brainwash the public is, again, the CIA. And there's quite a bit of evidence for CIA going about influencing public opinion. We have, as we mentioned earlier, Raborn was the CIA director at the time of the release of the Restoring the Quality of Our Environment. The CIA in 1974 released something called A Study of Climatological Research as it Pertains to Intelligence Problems. And this was the fount, it appears to be the fount of all this type of talk about how a minor fluctuation in Earth's average temperature can cause all sorts of chaos, all sorts of disease and destruction and war and the end of mankind and all this type of stuff. This was all originally brought forth in a document produced by the CIA in 1974.
Yes.
I've seen no earlier example of this type of extreme fear-mongering,
yes,
as was brought forward in this paper
in
1974.
One of their specialties.
Also, the CIA's influence over our media is well documented. We have the well-known Operation Mockingbird.
Yes, from the 1950s.
The CIA's influence over domestic media. And after the Kennedy assassination in 1963, they came up with the term conspiracy theorist in order to discredit people who were questioning the government's Warren Report.
Yes. Do you know who
the record is having done this?
Hey, listen to this real quick. You know Nick Begich. Did you know that his dad was killed in a plane crash over the Yukon that they think was shot down by a missile? And the other person on there was Senator Hale Boggs of Louisiana, who was the only dissenting member of the Warren Commission. That means he didn't buy the findings of Alan Dulles.
No, I didn't know that. I guess as Chucky Schumer says, the agency's got seven ways to Sunday to get back at you. Right? Okay. But anyway, and then let's go on about the CIA's influence over the media. Journalists like Carl Bernstein and Deborah Davis, very well-known journalists, have written about the CIA's influence over the media. There was a German journalist named Udo Ulfkote, who said that the CIA was writing articles for him and his colleagues. He said this on Russia Today TV. He mysteriously died before his book could come out in English. His book was titled Journalists for Hire, How the CIA Buys the News.
Can you spell his name?
Udo Ulfkote. U-D-O, that's his first name. And then the last name is Ulfkote. And last time I checked, his book was available on Amazon, but it was only available in German.
Yes.
And it cost a lot of money.
Yes.
And then but we have even more examples of the CIA involved in all this. We had the CIA coming forward with a document called the National Intelligence Assessment on the National Security Implications of Global Climate Change to 2030. That came out in 2008, and it was your standard global warming fear-mongering stuff about how, hey, you know, the Earth's warming, man's doing it, it's going to be terrible, we've got to do something about it. I mean, I've seen so many documents like this, but, this is one of the few that I've been able to find from the CIA, but it just shows their position. And then, the most famous thing of late was Brennan coming forward at Pratt House, which is the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations, saying that, he just woke up the other morning and thought, this might be a good idea. Let's spray things out of planes to save us from global warming. Gee, what a novel concept. You know, the way that it's presented, I mean, he thinks we're stupid. But, you know, him coming out with this at the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations is very telling, because if you read Fletcher Prouty's book, The Secret Team, you see the close alliance between the Central Intelligence Agency and the Council on Foreign Relations. They are hand in glove.
Yes.
Okay, so the paper I'm working on that should be ready probably early in the new year is looking like, honestly, I'd like to get it done before the end of the year, but I think it'll probably be done early in the new year. I'm working on a paper called Chemtrails Exposed, The Deep State and the New Manhattan Project. And this, I intend for this to be the definitive work thus far on who is behind all of this, who has been executively organizing the New Manhattan Project from the beginning. And I'm looking at groups like the Council on Foreign Relations and the CIA and Nazis that they brought over in Operation Paperclip. Again, I wrote that about that before, but
yes,
there's more, a lot more there. I'm looking at the Bush family. I'm looking at trying to look on my bookcase right now.
Are you going to talk about Lawrence Livermore National Lab?
Favorite players, of course, elite families like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and all these people are involved, or they appear to be involved. They have evidence that suggests that they are involved. I have to be very careful what I say when I'm talking about you know, this type of stuff. No, this is the most delicate part. I can't just say they're responsible. I can't just say these people are responsible. I have to say the evidence suggests and things like this because I don't want to be sued.
Exactly.
But this is going to be very powerful information. I'm sitting on a lot of really powerful information right now. But when this whole thing comes together, I think people are really going to dig this new article coming out in some months. But in the meantime, people can buy my book, Chemtrails Exposed, A New Manhattan Project. It's available on Amazon. You can get an ebook or a paperback. And what I'd really like people to do is to join my email list. And you can do that at my website, peteracurby.com. peteracurby.com.
That's K-I-R-B-Y.
Right, just like the video game character.
Like Fred Kirby, the singing cowboy.
I think that rings a vague bell, but yeah, we're out there.
Yes. Well, look, let me just ask one final question that maybe can lead us into, if we're ever able to do another interview, which I would really enjoy doing. How much don't we know about all this?
You know, I don't know. That's hard to see. Well, you know, what I'd really like to see, I think that they're keeping track of everything. I think that everything that they've done pertaining to everything, I mean, not just the New Manhattan Project, things associated with the New Manhattan Project, things that Alana Freeland writes about, you know, like the whole spectrum of cutting-edge military technology, every single aspect of it, I think, has been meticulously documented. The environmental devastation, everything. So I think, you know, we generally have a good overview of what's been going on here. Like, we have a good framework, and that's what I present in my work.
Yes.
But, you know, as far as the details of it and the drilling down, there's a lot that we don't know as far as that's concerned. But I am very hopeful that at some point lots of documents will be released. And I also, you know, I think once we can have that, once we can have a lot of official documentation being released and leaked and whatnot, you know, I intend for my book at some point to be just a narrative of science history.
Well, yes.
You know, just like any other book that you read about, let's say you read a book about the Manhattan Project.
Yes.
Where they just say, it started here, these guys were working on this, it evolved into this, it evolved into that, you know, all the details of everything, all the politics and all this stuff. I want my book at some point, probably by the third edition, to be just a narrative of the story of this whole science project.
Because then, with your meticulous presentation of accurate information, people are free to form their own conclusions.
Yeah. Yeah, I want my work, as it comes along, I like to make it more just all fact-based and less opinion, less of a polemic. A lot of the emotion comes into my work still to this day because I'm pissed off about the fact that we're being sprayed.
Yes.
You know, I don't like this. I don't like the fact that they're killing us, slow killing us and wrecking our environment and all this stuff. So I lash out in some of the stuff that I say. But, you know, I'm hoping that we'll kill this thing and then we can step back from it and dissect it in a more scientific manner.
Yes. Well, I think in the meantime, I'll maybe suggest some new technology that you can use to extract some core samples from the deep state itself.
That sounds interesting.
Well, look, let's sign off for now. This is Jeff Weverson Phillips thanking Peter A. Kirby from San Rafael, California for a very, very brilliant and very enlightening interview on his work with the New Manhattan Project and geophysical warfare and the future of humanity's relationship with the environment and Mother Earth here. But thanks, Peter, and I hope to talk with you again sometime.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff. You've been great.